a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Paul Gallant.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
The most interactive sports radio show in Houston.
Paul, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the Devastation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant.
He continues to dominate the heart of the Astros' order, striking out the side. Peña, Alvarez, and Bregman down here in the sixth. 11 strikeouts.
Another day, another bunch of Pantera mumble metal ruining my show open. Hello and welcome aboard the Paul Gallant Show on this Wednesday, June 7th of 2023. I'm Paul Gallant. It's the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. That was Kevin Gausman striking out the side in the sixth inning against the Houston Astros. Jeremy Peña, who had a rough night, 4 Ks. Yordan Alvarez worked from behind in both of those at-bats to get the strikeout. And then Alex Bregman, the last of which you heard right there. Kevin Gausman's a damn good pitcher for Toronto, and the old-time baseball head in me, and you know he's there, realizes that sometimes you just have to tip your cap to a great performance by the opposition, right? Gausman's one of the best pitchers in baseball, 7 innings pitched, and after that leadoff home run that he allowed to Mauricio Dubon, he had 13 strikeouts, 0 walks, only 4 hits the whole game, 2 by Dubon, 2 by Corey Jolks, none by any of the guys that you expect. It was to be expected too, right? I mean, the Astros did score 11 runs last night, and we are really smart baseball minds here on the Paul Gallant Show. When the Astros score 8 runs or more in a game, you know what happens the next game? Not good things. You got to stop scoring runs when you get to 7. You can't score 8 or more. 8 runs against the Tigers earlier this year, 2 runs the next game. 8 runs against the Pirates, 4 the next game. 8 runs against the Rangers, 1 the next game. 9 runs against the Blue Jays, 2 the next game. We're going to pretend that the 8 runs against the Blue Jays weren't followed up with 6 against the Braves the next night. 12 runs against the Brewers, 2 the next. 9 runs against the Angels, 1 the next. Last night, 11. On Tuesday, you get 1 against the Toronto Blue Jays. Sean Mapes, we are a smart baseball show, and a lot of baseball seam heads think, hey, we know a thing or two more about baseball than us, but nope, we understand the Astros have to stop scoring runs when they get to 7.
And the proof is in the pudding right there. I mean, the only exception was the 8 against the Blue Jays, but then they played a different team, 6 against the Braves. You can throw that out of the sample.
Exactly.
Completely ruins the sample.
You can always find data to support your argument, no matter how stupid the argument is. But now that we've gotten past talking about how you tip your hat to Kevin Gausman and the Astros just scored too many runs the night before, let's dive into something that we have not dove into thus far this year. Dusty Baker and his lineup management. He had a great playoffs, both with the lineup management and the bullpen management and the rotation management. And we figured we'll give him some benefit of the doubt going into this year. But now that we're 2 months in, going into a game where Gausman's on the mound, you know you're without Jose Altuve. Why not play, I don't know, the guy who had 4 extra base hits in the 2 games before, Yiner Diaz, first base or catcher? You had options. You could have made him your designated hitter. Instead, you rolled with Jose Abreu, Martin Maldonado, 0-for-6 with 3 strikeouts, and Maldonado had a throwing error. Before the game, Dusty Baker had this to say about why Yiner Diaz didn't play. Quote, I love the hitting, but there's more to catching than hitting, more than any other position on the field other than the pitcher. That's part of our defense. If they don't score, we're not losing. Well, if you don't score, you're not winning. And when you're going up against Kevin Gausman, you need to have all the bats that you possibly can. Continued Dusty, Maldi can control the game almost better than anyone. It's tough for me to have rookies on the mound, and it's even tougher when you got a rookie catcher and a rookie on the mound. Diaz caught Hunter Brown 5 times this year. Hunter Brown pitched last night. Hunter Brown was okay, you know, not his best. Gave up a couple of home runs, 3, I think, to be specific. Was it 2, 3? Whatever the case, not his best outing. That's how the Blue Jays got their runs, was by hitting home runs. Said Baker about Yainer Diaz continued, Diaz is still trying to learn. He's learning his craft, and it's on-the-job training. Do you get on-the-job training when you're sitting on the bench? Do you get on-the-job training when you're not in the batter's box going up against one of the best challenges in the American League in Kevin Gausman? The answer is obviously no. So, I hate to finally bring the knives out for Dusty Baker, but last night that was a lineup management decision. And when you take a look at where the Astros stand in the AL West, which will be more of a dogfight this year, just given the way that the Texas Rangers have started, last season was a cakewalk. It was so easy for them. This year's different. When you're going up against a good pitcher, you should have the best possible lineup you can out there. Is defense really going to make that much of a difference? Is Martin Maldonado really going to make that much of a difference? Because statistically, we know he's not the best at throwing runners out. He did throw a runner out last night, but he had the error that he threw into the outfield. It is entirely a feel thing when it comes to Martin Maldonado behind home plate catching pitchers. You might have a comfort, Dusty Baker, being a longtime manager in baseball with Maldonado in there as opposed to Diaz. But when Diaz has caught Hunter Brown before and when Diaz is red hot at the plate, it's inexcusable to keep him out of the lineup against one of the best pitchers in baseball. It's that simple. Really, it's that simple. I'm not yelling at Dusty Baker, but I mean, damn, even Dana Brown is disagreeing here. This is the first pushback I can remember from Dana Brown against Dusty. He was asked before the game about Yainer Diaz not playing. I like when he's in the lineup. I like what he brings to the table. I like that he has power. His OPS is climbing. Ultimately, I want to see him in the lineup more. But Dusty is running the team. He's the manager. It's his job to find a place for him to get in the lineup. I think he'll do that. It's a matter of the dog days of August, the middle of July. He could get a little bit more time. Well, why not against the best pitcher that the Astros will face this year? I mean, Gausman was brilliant last night. How many pitchers are going to be able to do better than what Gausman did? 13 strikeouts in 7 innings, 4 hits allowed, 1 run. Not many. Continued Dana. Dusty worked him in there. Would have been nice to see him a little bit more. But you know what? I'm not in Dusty's shoes. I'm not running the lineup. Okay, well, this is how you push responsibility on the manager if you're the general manager. Maybe Dana Brown is learning to say more than just extremely pandery things about what the Astros might do. It's his job and it's his call. I think he played him enough that he got some good at-bats in. But once he started playing a little bit more, I think he's cleaning up the approach a little bit and the OPS is on the rise. Losing development time is big for a young prospect. Can you develop when you go up against a good pitcher? A question, just a thought, food for thought. I think now that he's playing a little bit more, he's actually starting to get in the groove a little bit. Well, he couldn't stay in that groove last night because he was out of the lineup. As long as he can continue to do that, I think that's very good. He could not continue to do that last night because he wasn't in the lineup. The development time is important. And that's one of the things we worried about with carrying the 3 catchers. Was he going to lose development time while playing? Well, he's losing development time by not playing. Jeremy Branham on the Killer Bees had a good plan, I think, yesterday for getting Yainer Diaz some more at-bats. 2 games a week at catcher, 2 games a week at first base, 1 game a week at DH, which means 5 games a week. I am cool with all ideas that gets Diaz more playing time. And I'm annoyed that he didn't play last night. I understand that Dusty Baker loves his veterans. You want to show Maldonado deference, blah, 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 blah. You're going up against a great pitcher, Cy Young caliber. Put together the best lineup you can. We'll see what the Astros do tonight. It looks like there's some guys that are going to get the night off. Hopefully, Jose Altuve is going to be back. You had no Altuve. You also decided, hey, we're not going to put Yainer Diaz in the lineup. I'm annoyed. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Twitch.tv/ESPN 97.5. HRW_S1W. Dusty, one World Series championship. Paul, zero World Series championships. That's true. I never even got all the way to the World Series in MVP baseball 2005. Nope. Never got quite there.
What?
I don't even know what the celebration was like. The problem was...
The champagne, the digital champagne looked like it tastes so good.
I spent a lot more time, Sean, while playing that video game, playing with the minor league teams, because I'd always start with some bad team. I like to play with
real grinder. That's what you are.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was fun to play with a bad team and try to turn them around. So generally, I'd be playing in the minor leagues, drafting a guy and trying to turn that guy into the next Babe Ruth. A text here. Since last year, this is the 10th time we scored 10 plus runs and followed the next day with a loss with dreadful scoring. Hell yeah. I like that from the 713. A little bit more statistical data. A texter asks, are we forgetting about diplomatic immunity with Dusty Baker? He was in international territory.
It was in Toronto. It was different jurisdiction.
Yeah, different jurisdiction.
So in the U.S., on U.S. soil, still diplomatic immunity?
Theoretically.
Or do you want to see how it goes through in the Canadian courts tonight?
I guess I do. I guess I want to see that, Sean. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up next, I hate the Canadians, like, as a people. How many countries are better than Canada? And Vanessa shared with us something very interesting that Blue Jays fans do during their games. The latest on James Harden as well. It's the Paul Gallant Show.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. All your base are belong to us.
All your base are belong to us.
Welcome back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here is your ambiguously gay host, Paul Gallant.
Most interactive sports talk show in Houston. I asked going into this segment, how many North American countries are better than Canada? Eric the Driver says there's 195 recognized countries in the world. Some like Somalia or Venezuela are clearly not better than Canada, but I will rank them around 180. I'm probably not going to go that far down, but I want to share with you something. I'm a petty person that holds grudges for no reasons that are largely based in history because I read a little bit too much history. But for those who don't know, I am mostly Irish-American and French-Canadian-American by blood. I don't like how judgmental Canadians are, specifically Canadian journalists are, of our country. They take a lot of pot shots living in a country that really doesn't matter. And maybe that's why they're looking for content. So they look to the South, the country that matters, and try to weigh in on American politics and stuff like that. Piss off. I don't like Canada because I feel like they're a little bit patronizing and passive aggressive with the way that they speak about us, which is ironic given some of the atrocities that they've committed. Like, I don't know, the expulsion of the Acadians, the French Canadians, after the French and Indian War in the 1700s, where they forced 11,000 citizens who were French Canadian to leave. 5,000 of them died in disease and shipwreck. Like, I hold it against them. I don't like Canada. I don't at all. Bleep the whole country and bleep Blue Jays fans entirely because of that. Yes, I'm crazy. I'm admitting it. But, okay, let's take a look. Like, just countries in Canada. Where does Canada eventually, you know, fall? If you take a look at countries in North America, okay, you got Anguilla. It's a territory. That sounds fun. Antigua, Barbuda, Aruba, Bahamas. Come on, pretty mama. There's so many beautiful islands in the Caribbean. And yeah, maybe they're not exactly, I don't know, safe. Like Haiti, you might get some, I don't know, earthquakes. Or Cuba, you might get a little bit of communism. But I mean, there's only one place that's a frozen cold wasteland in North America. And yeah, maybe you're, you know, living in poverty or something like that and all these other places across North America. But Canada's probably towards the bottom. This is what happens when it's cold. The cold and the snow stink. But anyway, listen, you know, Canadians have their traditions, right? Patronizing, passive-aggressive people that only have independence because England realized that it wasn't worth like keeping those colonies as a part of the empire. They're like, oh, it's too expensive to just own a big forest with snow.
I think that's the biggest thing is that Americans, we fought for our independence.
We did, Sean.
Canada, they got given their independence.
Because England was like, this is too expensive. It was like, yeah, England's got a bunch of streaming plans, and they were like, oh, this is like Philo TV. This is like Pluto. You know what? We're done here.
You know what? Ted Lasso's over. I think we can cancel Apple TV Plus.
And you know what? Apple TV actually has a show that I'm intrigued by once I'm done with Ted Lasso, because I'm only doing the one-month thing to watch Ted Lasso. It's not been good. Anyway, I was texting with Vanessa. Vanessa's been doing a great job during doing sideline reporting. Excuse me. Just Astros reporting the last couple of games in Toronto, the first couple of times. And I was texting with her, and she said, Paul, you need to look up the song that the Blue Jays play going into the seventh inning. I guess it's their version of Deep in the Heart of Texas. Anyway, it sounds like this.
You got a diamond, you got nine men, you got a hat and a bat, and that's not all. You got the bleachers, got them from spring till fall. You got a dog and a drink and the umpire's call. What do you want? Let's play ball. Is that a fly ball or is it a seagull coming in from the lake? Just to catch the game.
Can we
it's
pause
the last
for a second?
Inning.
Okay. The roof is closed most of the year. This is essentially like an even more half-assed version of the Astros cocaine song, which we play. He's just listing things that happen in baseball.
Is that a seagull from the lake?
You got the bleachers. You got nine men.
I can't tell who he's doing a like a kind of knockoff singing style of, but it's like he's definitely doing someone that I've heard their songs before. He's like doing almost a Weird Al parody.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like that. Anyway, the song continues. There is a chorus, and per Vanessa, Blue Jays fans lose their bleep when this song comes on.
Our guys are winning. Dave's put down a smoker, a strike, and you got no doubt.
Yeah!
What do you want?
What do you want?
Let's play ball.
Okay. Blue Jays. Let's play ball.
It's a beautiful evening, fans. At the ballpark, the game starts. Warm summer breezes, sun's going down, and it's all dark. The ballpark, that's okay.
It's okay.
It's a night game.
It's a night game.
Okay, okay, Blue Jays, let's play ball. Okay,
okay,
Blue Jays, let's play ball.
Woo-hoo!
Bring on a White Sox.
Oh, it's still going.
Bring on a Bo Sox.
Now they're just gonna list all the teams.
Bring on the Brewers, the Rangers, and the Yankees too. We'll beat the Indians.
Grayson,
we'll
oh.
beat the Tigers. We'll beat the A's so bad. Gonna make Billy blue.
What do you want?
Let's play ball.
Played the whole song. How about that? So shout out to Vanessa Richardson for making us aware of this. She's told me, you're going to lose your mind when you hear this song. Yeah, I did. I did.
I will say the chorus, pretty good. When it goes, okay, okay, let's play baseball. Or okay, okay, Blue Jays, let's play baseball. That part's good. The verses, like, it takes a minute to get to the good part.
It takes a while. It takes a little bit of time to get there.
They mentioned seagulls before they mentioned, okay, let's play baseball. So.
Before they mentioned the Blue Jays.
A different bird. Literally a different bird.
Another bird. Yeah, may as well call yourself the Seahawks or something like that at this point. Okay, it's the Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Yesterday, we didn't have a chance to play this. Sorry, I had jury duty. I was busy being the best American I can as the Astros invade Canada and hopefully send those people back into the Stone Age. Oh, wait, that's not nice. That's not cool. But on the latest Ryan Russillo podcast, per Shams Charania, James Harden is torn over staying in Philadelphia or moving to Houston. Kenyon Martin, you know him, former NBA player, father of an important, integral part of the Houston Rockets going forward. Maybe. Which one is he? Is it Kevin? Is it Kevin Martin?
KJ Martin?
KJ yeah. Martin.
Kenyon Martin Jr.? Yeah.
Okay. Why are we calling him KJ Martin? That's a little confusing.
Kenyon Jr.
But that's not his name.
Yeah. Kenyon Martin Jr. is the son of Kenyon Martin.
But he's called KJ.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
Kenyon Jr.
If he was named like Kevin James Martin, that would make sense. The Jr. goes at whatever. Fine. That's semantics. Here is what Kenyon Martin had to say about a possible James Harden Houston Rockets reunion.
Do you have any interest in James Harden coming back to Houston to play with KJ, or don't like that?
No. Like James has made his mark in this league. He's done what he had to do. I just don't think you putting him in a situation where your core guys that you are depending on are 19, 20, 21, 22 years old. Because you stunt their growth and their development. If you're depending on Jalen to be this superstar that you were trying to put him in role to be, then I think it's going to stunt Jalen's growth and Jabari and Sengun and those kids who you've drafted first round high, who you feature, who you depend on. I just think James, the way he demands the ball and his style of play right now, will stunt their growth. And I don't think that's fair to them. Yeah. But I don't sign the checks. So.
I mean, I think we all agree with Kenyon Martin here. And you heard Paul George essentially saying the same thing. You want these guys to grow. I just don't see how James Harden helps them grow on the court or off the court. I do think he makes them a more watchable product, though, and I think that's the tricky nuance here. If you're Tillman Fertitta, do you care about competing for championships right now at this moment in time when it seems like they're very far away and you just got the fourth overall pick and you're not getting Victor Wembanyama, or do you care about having a watchable product again that people actually talk about in town? Because I think the Rockets of the three teams in town right now are the one that is the least interesting. You know, the Texans got a new head coach and they got a new quarterback. They got shiny new toys. The Astros are obviously the Astros. So I think that's something that Tillman Fertitta is going to have to weigh, and seems like he's obsessed with James Harden. But James Harden says he's torn over staying in Philly or moving to Houston. So let's help him out, because Philly's got a lot to offer. Philly has steak sandwiches with Cheese Whiz on them. Cheese Whiz. And that is the delicacy of Philadelphia. Did you know that Philadelphia has the highest density of haunted houses in the United States? If you've been watching, I Think You Should Leave, there's a hot club at a haunted house, at least somewhere in the United States. Maybe that's enough to keep James Harden in town. Maybe it's in Philadelphia. There's a cracked bell in Philly. There's a statue of a fictional athlete who lost, Rocky, in Philly. There's a lot to offer in Philly. So, James, I hope you listen to this, and I hope you seriously consider all of the great things that are in Philadelphia. We got to find a good strip club there. Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5, 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call in and text in. The text line has blown up over that Blue Jay song. We'll read some of the best texts coming up. Also, around the NFL, Damian Pierce, Christian McCaffrey, are they going to be looked at the same years from now? They could be, based off of what we're seeing at Texas OTAs. Paul Galacho, stick around.
ESPN 97.5.com. We keep getting away with it.
He can't keep getting away with it.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Dad, hush.
Tackling the biggest issues in the NFL.
This just in.
Here's the 10-minute drill with Paul Gallant.
Football time.
The most interactive sports talk show in Houston. The last segment we played a song called OK Blue Jays that the Blue Jays play going into the seventh inning stretch of every home game. I guess it is their deep in the heart of Texas or Sweet Caroline if you're a Red Sox fan. A couple of texts in response from the 409. That is by far, and I mean by far, the worst sports song I've ever heard in my life. It ruined my day. All caps, make it stop. Bunch of Randy Newman texts. Made me check if Randy Newman was Canadian. Another text. The only redeeming quality of that song from Eric the Driver was the okay Blue Jays part. It was fun. I mean, it's lazy, but it rhymes.
Yeah. Yeah, it does rhyme. It does rhyme. That is the best part. That is by far the best. I mean, the rest of the song sucks. So
even that part sucks.
That part's like fine.
It's
like,
such that's a like low an bar average. To clear.
It's like that's average. Everything else is so far below average, it makes it look good.
Ken and Katie sounds like Adam Sandler in the Turkey song. Another text. It's even worse than an Adam Sandler imitation of Adam Sandler.
They got the ball in the field.
There's a seagull.
There's a seagull watching the game.
We got some syrup. And there's a lager. And there's a lumberjack. And some hockey. Hey, look, it's the maple leaves. Oh, it's they got a sweet.
It's the lunch lady. 8 crazy nights in Toronto.
There's Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore. Don't forget about Little Nicky.
Another text. Do you think George Springer sings along to this every game? No, but credit to him for not killing himself.
Yeah, no, he when he hears the song, then he like checks his Wells Fargo account. He's like, okay, the check's still clear. I can sit through this.
I put together a power rankings of Houston Astros that we missed the most because Springer did go yard off of Hunter Brown yesterday. Springer's at the top. I think Springer has to be at the top. After that, that's where it gets a little bit tricky. Personally, I would put Charlie Morton as my second most missed Astro. 3, I had Carlos Correa. 4, I had Verlander. 5, I had Yuli. I think some people are going to have Yuli a little bit higher than me. I think some people are annoyed with Correa looking for the bag. I'm not. And I feel like we forget about what Verlander did in 2017 because of the last couple of postseasons. I had at 69,420th Gerrit Cole. The Scott Boras hat is an unforgivable offense.
Too high. Too high for
probably too high. You're right. All right, let's go around the NFL really quickly. Is Damian Pierce going to be the next Christian McCaffrey? Damian Pierce, the Texans' stud, second-year running back, had this to say about how the work in the passing game is going for the running backs.
We're really looking at, like I said, that's what Christian McCaffrey's first guy to come to mind because that's just his game. You know, that was his game, and it would just really, you know, exemplify coming in slow's offense, you know, more specifically, his cut-ups coming with the option routes, the angles, the whip routes. I ain't going to say too much. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to spill the beans too much.
He's funny. I don't want to spill the beans too much. No, spill more beans. No one is spilling beans. No one is going to be spilling beans all year. You are the only person, Damian Pierce, that I feel like we can turn to actually hear something interesting on this Texans roster. And that's no offense to them. You can just tell that they have all been coached up in the Patriots way of not saying anything ever.
I also like the idea that like the beans is like angle routes and option routes from the running back. Like other coaches are going to hear this clip and be like, oh, that's what Christian McCaffrey's been doing. he's running a Texas route. Oh, okay.
I like the idea of using Pierce in the passing game. We'll see just how much they do it. And they are going to have to do a better job of managing his workload this coming season. Hopefully Devin Singletary will be able to help out. I like Singletary as a player, but we'll see. We will see. I feel like he wasn't as impactful as you expected him to be. Where was he? Buffalo last?
Yeah, he was in Buffalo.
Right. The Bills running game was terrible, and I don't know why it was so bad. Are we blaming the offensive line entirely for it? Like, the Bills running game has really been non-existent the last couple of years. We talk about dysfunctional organizations a lot on this show because the Texans have been one of them for a very long time. But I always enjoy hearing stories from other organizations about how dysfunctional they are, because it makes me feel better about the Texans. Again, this is, you know, sort of where we are as a franchise here in Houston. But Derek Anderson played for the Arizona Cardinals in 2010. And it sounds like the Cardinals might be as cheap and dysfunctional as the Bengals were before they got Joe Burrow. Here's Anderson.
It didn't work out down there, and actually might be one of the most dysfunctional organizations that I was ever a part of. But
second or first?
It's a hard...
You can just say the Browns the most.
No,
it's okay.
Because there was... Browns never made me pay for water or Gatorade.
What?
They didn't ever charge me for sweatsuits. Like, I mean, like...
What?
Like, lock the water coolers at like 4 o'clock, the Gatorade coolers, like...
Did they just not have, like, employees or, like...
It was the, like, our lunch, we got charged, we got charged for lunch. Like, lunch was, like, on a, like, a buffet line from some guy's truck from the parking lot. Like, it was a weird, weird operation and not my favorite situation.
It's nice to know that the Texans, despite a lot of attempts, have not taken the title belt as the most dysfunctional organization in the NFL. The Cardinals were doing this in 2010. This was not that long after that Super Bowl appearance that they had against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And they are as messy as it gets over the last couple of years. I mean, drafting quarterbacks in the top 10 back-to-back years, the latter of which is a video game addict. You hire Jonathan Gannon, the most uninspiring hire, I think, of the offseason based off of press conferences. Again, we're basing it off of press conferences. That place is a mess. The general manager was, like, suspended from the team for DUI. The owner is in a back and forth with another ex-executive over, like, harassment claims and other things. Yes, it's bad here. It's bad other places, too. So whenever anyone says the Texans are the most inept organization in the NFL, you should say, not so fast, my friends, like your Lee Corso, and then just say the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Because that's really all you got, but you can point at the Cardinals.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, at least we fired Jack Easterby. Also, Derek Anderson, like it was mentioned in the clip, played for the Browns, and I'm sure the Browns are also like, hey.
Pretty messy?
No, they're like, hey, we didn't get brought up as the
last.
That's
true.
Only, you know, we only got brought up as someone being like, oh, it's probably the Browns, right? No, it's not. Also, Derek Anderson, I had to look it up on Wikipedia, never played for the Texans. I don't know why, but in my brain, he just felt like a very Texans quarterback, like a backup quarterback for the Texans.
Does feel like that could have happened. The Chiefs were at the White House. Thank God. Travis Kelce was stopped from his tried and true lame ass celebration that he does whenever a microphone's in front of him, where he says, "You gotta fight for your right to party." I think this was a staged bit, but Kelce went up to the microphone as Joe Biden was wandering around, perhaps aimlessly, and Patrick Mahomes grabbed him to stop him.
So I've been waiting for this.
Sorry.
Thank God. Can't have more of that in the universe. Also, the reason I'm wearing a Seahawks t-shirt today, the Seahawks said they're going to wear their 90s era throwbacks against the Browns in week 8 this year. I think their 90s era throwbacks are great. When they left the AFC West for the NFC, they switched to this like ugly submarine looking crap. It's terrible. And here are my NFL throwback jerseys ranked. Number 1, the Eagles Kelly Greens from the 80s that they wore into the early 90s with Randall Cunningham under center. Two, the 80s Patriots, red jerseys, white helmets with the Minuteman logo. Much better than the Elvis thing that they got going on, but they won Super Bowls with that one. 1990s Denver Broncos with the lighter blue helmet with the D and the horse riding through it and the orange jerseys. The 1980s, number four, red Falcon jerseys with red helmets, the Steve Bartkowski era jerseys. The 90s Seahawks are number five for me, and then the 99 and before Rams are number six. Those are the best throwback uniforms that there are. Paul Galacho, ESPN, 975-925-713-780-3776. We saw one of the show favorites do what we expect him to do last night. And we're going to introduce a new little segment called Judge Paul. It's the Paul Galacho, ESPN, 975 and 925.
Thank you for listening to ESPN 97.5. It means the world.
A whole new world. A dazzling place I never knew.
Welcome back to ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and the superior clairvoyant sports mind of Sean Mapes.
Rafael Montero is going to be the guy that's going to try and do that. 25 games this season. That ERA elevated with some rough outings, trying to work down from that. 27 strikeouts on the season.
Oh, Bichette greets him with a ball into right center field. Well hit and gone. Bichette, who leads the league in off-the-field hits, just hits one out to right center. His team-leading 13th home run of the year, his team-leading 41st RBI of the season. All the runs coming on home runs tonight. It's 4-1 Toronto.
It writes itself. The worst part is Jeff Blum introduces him. You just hear a crack. It was the first pitch, and Bichette just mashed it to the opposite field for a home run. It was a bad outing for Rafael Montero. What do you bleeping expect? You know, I don't want to pile on, but I do. And I guess I, in a way, by playing that highlight again, I am. So that's the Rafael Montero show, everybody.
I think he gets a pass.
You think he gets a pass?
Yeah, yeah. He came in. It's hard for these guys, you know, when they're the eighth inning guy. They're normally trying to protect a lead, and there's a certain adrenaline that comes with that. When you're coming in already down 3-1, I can, you know. But honestly, it shouldn't even count towards your ERA.
You're losing and you give up a home run?
No, I also think that George Springer's home run in the third inning shouldn't count against Hunter Brown's ERA. He's a former Astro. Might as well just count it for Houston.
You're making excuses today.
Yeah.
Do you think it was correct to play Maldonado over Yainer Diaz?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, good. Okay.
Although I do respect how he calls a game.
Stop.
Really, in my eyes, you know, you take away the Bo Bichette home run, you add the two runs on the Springer.
Stop. I know you're having fun.
It's
I don't
a tie
believe,
right there.
I don't believe any of that coming out of your mouth. I don't. And I
the
get that idea.
Exchange rate on Canadian runs.
Yeah, what's the exchange rate? Oh God. Yesterday, guys, I was like about an hour and 15 late because I had jury duty. I thought I would be in and out because the last time I had jury duty, I was in and out. I was in and out in 30 minutes. Yesterday, I was there for 4 hours, and honestly, as time wore on, I got more and more frustrated with the fact that they did not select me, a brilliant, inquisitive, skeptical mind, to be a part of that jury. So I decided we're going to do a new segment now. I am making myself a judge.
In the criminal justice system, jurors are selected to determine whether or not someone is innocent or guilty. But since Paul Gallant didn't get selected as a juror yesterday despite spending 4 hours in downtown Houston, he is now proclaiming himself a judge. This is his story.
Sean Mapes is the bailiff here. He will be presenting me with cases, and I will determine whether, I guess, I approve or disapprove. So we're just going to go old school. Commodus at the gladiator match. Thumbs up, thumbs down. I am the judge, jury, and executioner. This is a kangaroo court.
Yes, we're taking on Judge Judy, Judge Mathis.
Judge Joe Brown.
Judge Joe Brown. I did not want to short shrift him. I wasn't going to forget him. Mm. No, I actually watched two episodes of Judge Joe Brown to prepare for this segment. First case, Ja Morant versus the NBA. The NBA has teased a suspension punishment coming for the Grizzlies superstar point guard after another incident of what appeared to be a gun waving around in an Instagram live video. Now, Ja's camp is reportedly claiming that that gun on the IG Live, on the most recent IG Live, was a toy gun. Judge Paul, what do you make of this case? Set someone straight here.
It does seem like Ja Morant is the kind of person that would be riding around town with a toy gun. You could argue that gun he had in the Denver nightclub was a toy gun, so that might actually be used against him. It could be the same little mini blicky, as the kids call it. As far as the suspension goes, I don't think a big suspension is really going to help him out. I feel like it's just a show to perhaps warn other players. But is a suspension actually going to make Ja Morant stop doing this? Clearly, the rehab stint that he had is not. Clearly, the interview he did with Jalen Rose is not. But I think I'm with Ryan Russillo here. I think a long suspension doesn't solve the problem at all here. I think it actually makes it perhaps more easy for Ja Morant to fall back. So as far as Ja's team defending with that as a toy gun, I disapprove. But as far as a long suspension for Ja Morant, I also disapprove. Thumbs down for both.
That's my favorite type of courtroom TV. No, it's not courtroom TV. The judge shows, judge TV shows, where both the people are wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fitting that that's your first
I'm
judgment.
I'm King Solomon, bitch. Yeah.
Both of you are wrong. Next case. The Cleveland Browns players versus the city of Cleveland robbing them. Greg Newsom, most recently, the most recent Browns player to be robbed. His Ram truck was parked in the parking lot when he went to a bar. Police went back to the truck, or Newsom told police he went back to the truck around 3:30 a.m. And six masked men jumped out from an unknown car and robbed him at gunpoint. Now, this is not the first incident. There's been three Browns players that have all been robbed recently.
Now, Sean, this might be a tricky question to ask on the spot. Is Cleveland a left-leaning city?
I'll look up and see who their mayor is. Is that the best way to look?
It is. I think so. Because if Cleveland is a left-leaning city, them's the breaks. Because you know what? We talk about these NFL players who are providing for their family. You know what those carjackers are also doing? Providing for their family. And in left-leaning cities these days, assuming that you don't steal over a certain amount of money from people or value and can prove that you are doing it for your family, which, by the way, just bring up a DVD of Fast and Furious when you are presenting your case in court, because those guys are stealing for family, I feel like he would be free. But this is entirely dependent on where Cleveland leans politically.
Both the candidates that ran in 2021 ran as independents.
Oh, damn it. Don't know.
That's the hardest thing.
Son of a bitch.
Justin Bibb. I don't know.
Well,
it says his party's nonpartisan. And then he ran against Kevin Kelly, who also his party's nonpartisan.
Okay.
On Wikipedia.
Well, so I'm going to assume, since it's a city, that it leans left as a whole, and that means that that was totally legal.
The graphic on Wikipedia used blue for Bibbs, but yellow for the other guy. This is impossible to tell.
Okay, that's very confusing. Look, was Robin Hood a bad guy? As Boogie Gang 504 brings up on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975.
Depends who you ask.
Hey, rob from the rich, give to the poor. And that's going to wrap up today's edition of Judge Paul.
Can we get a quick one?
We can do a quick one.
Pete Davidson versus PETA?
Pete Davidson.
Okay.
I heard it. He left a voicemail.
Yeah. Saying, bleep you, suck my bleep.
Adopt, don't shop. people need to chill. Because some of the dogs that you adopt are absolutely crazy. And most people are not capable of owning dogs. I strongly believe that. You should stick with the starter pet, which is a cat. And I know, I like cats and dogs equally. Dogs are a lot of work. And a lot of people are not ready to handle dogs. And they don't admit it. And they feel like they need to bring their stupid pooch wherever they go.
Oh, yeah, at restaurants.
On a plane, restaurant, and they're barking.
No one needs to see your
dog. Oh, he never does this, they say, as the pit bull mauls your small toddler. Like, stop. You don't want to get a dog that is from one of those places if you've never owned a dog before. I understand that you feel bad for them. I feel bad for them too. But I think you should have to have owned a dog before to take in a rescue. Seems like it's more problems can arise when you have not owned a dog before with that. Anyway, so here we go. The bum is so great. Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. What are the biggest moments in sports hypocrisy and where do they rank compared to Jay Monahan yesterday? We'll talk about that. It's the Paul Galan Show.
ESPN 97.5, because every day is Children's Day.
We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams.